I am proud of a program and of a country that has helped to arm and feed and clothe millions of people who live on the front lines of freedom. I am especially proud that this country has put forward for the 60s a vast cooperative effort to achieve economic growth and social progress throughout the Americas, the Alliance for Progress. I do not underestimate the difficulties that we face in this mutual effort among our close neighbors, but the free states of this hemisphere, working in close collaboration, have begun to make this alliance a reality. Today, it is feeding one out of every four school-aged children in Latin America an extra food ration from our farm surpluses. It has distributed 1.5 million school books and is building 17,000 classrooms. It has helped resettle tens of thousands of families on land they can call their own. It is stimulating our good neighbors to more self-help and reform, fiscal, social, institutional, and land reform. It is bringing housing and hope and health to millions who were forgotten. The men and women of this hemisphere know that the alliance cannot succeed if it's only another name for a United States handout, that it can succeed only as the Latin American nations themselves devote their best efforts to fulfilling its goals. This story is the same in Africa, in the Middle East, and in Asia. Wherever nations are willing to help themselves, we stand ready to help them build new bulwarks of freedom. We are not purchasing votes for the Cold War. We have gone to the aid of imperiled nations, neutrals and allies alike. What we do ask, and all that we ask, is that our help be used to the best advantage, and that their own efforts not be diverted by needless quarrels with other independent nations. Despite all its past achievements, the continued progress of the Mutual Assistance Program requires a persistent discontent with present progress. We have been reorganizing this program to make it more effective and an efficient instrument, and that process will continue this year. But free world development will still be an uphill struggle. Government aid can only supplement the role of private investment and trade expansion and commodity stabilization, and above all, internal self-improvement. The processes of growth are gradual, bearing fruit in a decade, not a day. Our successes will be neither quick nor dramatic. But if these programs were ever to be ended, our failures in a dozen countries would be sudden and would be certain. Neither money nor technical assistance, however, can be our only weapon against poverty. In the end, the crucial effort is one of purpose, requiring the fuel of finance, but also a torch of idealism. And nothing carries the spirit of this American idealism and expresses our hopes better and more effectively to the far corners of the earth than the American Peace Corps. A year ago, less than 900 Peace Corps volunteers were on the job. A year from now, they will number more than 9,000 men and women aged 18 to 79, willing to give 2 years of their lives to helping people in other lands. There are, in fact, nearly 1 million Americans serving their country and the cause of freedom in overseas posts, a record no other people can match. Surely those of us who stay at home should be glad to help indirectly by supporting our aid programs, by opening our doors to foreign visitors and diplomats and students, and by proving day by day, by deed as well as by word, that we are a just and generous people. Third, what comfort can we take from the increasing strains and tensions within the communist bloc? Here, hope must be tempered with caution. For the Soviet-Chinese disagreement is over means, not ends. A dispute over how to bury the West is no grounds for Western rejoicing. Nevertheless, while a strain is not a fracture, it is clear that the forces of diversity are at work inside the communist camp. despite all the iron disciplines of regimentation and all the iron dogmatisms of ideology, Marx is proven wrong once again. For it is the closed communist societies, not the free and open societies, which carry within themselves the seeds of internal disintegration. This disarray of the communist empire has been heightened by two other formidable forces. One is the historic force of nationalism and the yearning of all men to be free. The other is the gross inefficiency of their economies. For a closed society is not open to ideas of progress, and a police state finds it cannot command the grain to grow. New nations asked to choose between two competing systems need only compare conditions in East and West Germany, Eastern and Western Europe, North and South Vietnam. They need only compare the disillusionment of communist Cuba with the promise of a hemisphere alliance for progress. And all the world knows that no successful system builds a wall to keep its people in and freedom out. And the wall dividing Berlin is a symbol of that communist failure. Finally, what can we do to move from the present pause towards enduring peace? I would counsel caution. I foresee no spectacular reversal in communist methods or goals. But if all these trends and developments can persuade the